Again, it's good to be together. You're a good choir. That's a great, great song. I love that melody. It's a former University of Chicago professor and philosopher named Joseph Sittler. And Sittler once commented, as he aged, he lived well into his 90s, that old age is a time for summing up and letting go. I'm not there yet. But, like learning to play the piano, it helps to practice when you're a beginner. And so my remarks today have been prompted in many ways by an attempt to sum up some things that have been important to me. I've long believed as a minister, as a pastor, it was hard to believe, too, that it's been 4 years since my ordination. I vowed to myself, even as a Lutheran, that I would always tell the truth, that I would not tell a lie from the pulpit. I would not try to teach something that I did not myself believe, which was sometimes difficult, I must admit. But that also probably accounts for the slow evolution of my career from Lutheranism to the United Church of Christ to Unitarian expressions of faith. And the truth is I've been engaged in a struggle with religion most of my life. This is true professionally. As I said, I've now been occupied in service to religion in some capacity, even before ordination, for almost 50 years. And before that, looking back now, I was steeped in the religious world of Scandinavian piety as a child, Prairie Lutheranism, literally from birth. I was baptized in the Cathedral of the Norwegian American Lutherans, that central church in Minneapolis. And I was raised up in a small northern Minnesota community of Scandinavian Lutherans and Eastern European Catholics with a few Methodists sprinkled in. And for most of human history, people participated in the religion in which they were raised, rarely moving from one faith to another or even one denomination to another within a religion. That has been true from time immemorial. Religion typically was more a function of tribe and clan than personal awakening or dramatic conversion, for that matter. That has changed now for many, many reasons. But my generation was still of a time when, if one continued to practice a faith, it was the faith in which one was raised. So how did I end up here? I ask myself that often. I ask myself that question in more ways than one, of course. Now, in my 68th year, the question fascinates me, not just for myself, but all of the chance meetings and occasions and vagaries of life that lead one from this moment to this moment, to encountering this person. These vagaries of life, the twists and turns of fate and choice together, lead me to this moment, here with you, in this hour together, pondering and questioning, trying to wring some sense of meaning and truth out of the marrow bone of life and experience. I use the word struggle to describe my own dialectical relationship with the very word as well as the occupation of religion. It's been a struggle, still is. This was true even as a child. I was a somewhat rebellious youth with a taste for troublemaking and catechetical studies, as my minister frequently pointed out and more than once asked me to leave earlier than the lesson was concluded. I should add, just as an aside, I think Jeff may know this, but Jim Kasperson and I grew up in the same small town in the same small Lutheran church, and both of us would have been nominated as the least likely people to become a minister for very good reasons. But I developed both a fascination as well as a distaste for much of what passes as religion. And I could not and still do not get that out of my system. I often think of this poem when I think of religion. It's the poet Marion Moore expressed a similar struggle with her vocation as a poet in her poem Poetry. She says this, "I too dislike it. There are things that are important beyond all this fiddle. Reading it, however, with a perfect contempt for it, one discovers that there is in it, after all, a place for the genuine." And she also writes in that poem, "These things are important not because a high-sounding interpretation can be put upon them, but because they are useful. When they become so derivative," it's hard to read fluently when you can't turn the page, so I'll start that again. "When they become so derivative as to become unintelligible, the same thing may be said for all of us, that we do not admire what we cannot understand." And at the conclusion of that poem, she writes, "In the meantime, if you demand on the one hand, in defiance of their opinion, the raw material of poetry in all its rawness, and that which is on the other hand genuine, then you are interested in poetry." Well, the same is true for religion. I too dislike it. There are things more important beyond all this fiddle, the simple daily acts of love and mercy, washing your face in the morning and brushing your teeth at night may be more important than every sermon I've been given or that I have offered. But on the other hand, there is a place for discovery of that which is genuine, and it's the raw material of life and life's experience and the way we try to make sense of our tragedies and sorrows as well as our joys that draws me back again and again. It's that raw material of life and the experience of that which is genuine on occasion that drives my interest in religion, but also my vocation of trying to gather with others like you to make sense of our lives and to support one another in the mysteries of our sorrows and joys. And so I've set out to try to understand the raw material of the sacred, to try to identify the sacred in ways outside of dogma and creed. I tried to understand the genuine experience of longing, as well as the search for meaning wrung from the mysteries that surround us all the time. And I've tried to do this in defiance of the opinions of dogma and creed. A sense of the powers that draw us together with love interests me, especially the power of love that draws us together that might overcome the forces that estrange and drive us apart. There may be something naive and out of fashion to these ideas. I'm aware within, certainly, that my sentiments run perilously close to the tongue-in-cheek description of Guy Noir, the fictional detective, the old prairie home companion. Some of you know that as a fellow who spends his time trying to find the answer to life's persistent questions. I often think that's, you know, that's sort of the joke on me. I'm also aware that trying to reflect autobiographically on these things in maybe 20 minutes is itself an exercise close to absurdity. When I decided to do this for this service, I thought, this would be easy. I'm just going to talk a little bit about my life experience and why religion fascinates me and why serving this congregation is so incredibly important and meaningful to me. It would be a quick write, which turned out to be almost impossible. I was still sweating bullets last night. When I got to the 20th page of writing, I realized that trying to account for all of the kinds of experiences that lead one to a moment much less these kind of grand ideas, is impossible. But I'm committed to an attempt, and if you'll indulge me just a bit longer, there are a few things worth noting, first from childhood. By the way, if I offered, if I wrote this talk again in another week, I could choose a completely different set of experiences and ideas that animate my own spiritual life. But these are the ones for today. As I mentioned, I was raised in a small town in the heart of the Red River Valley of the North. That's the remnant of the great glacier Agassiz, which deposited a great plain of the richest gumbo black soil with such depth that it may well be called the most fertile land on earth. This is true. When one drives into my hometown of Warren, there is still a sign that says, "Welcome to Warren and the Red River Valley, the breadbasket of the world." That's not so far from true. With wheat and barley at 80 to 100 bushels an acre, sunflowers in some corners as far as the eye can see to the horizon. That was my cathedral. The amber waves of grain, and the rich blue skies, and the cold, cold Canadian-like winters. You can see for 10 miles to the horizon of the next town, unbroken by any hills or forests, a completely flat plain of land with great vistas and a sense of openness and expansiveness. My first catechetics were learned that way, as well as learned along the bluffs of a small creek called the Snake River, which slithers its way slowly through the little town of Warren. The interdependent web of all things that we speak of was not yet articulated for me, but was indelibly ingrained into my heart. Playing along the banks of that river, digging forts and tunnels into its snow-covered bluffs in the winter, discovering the lair of the pocket gopher and the flight of the hawk overhead. This was the interdependent weave of life and death. Observing an owl taking a bunny from the yard was an occasion that's memorable still. Also, as a boy growing up in that culture, killing a bird myself for the first time, my own hand taking a life, seeing the red drop of blood from a cedar wax wing, like a ruby on the snow at winter, and crestfallen, realizing that I had killed for no purpose other than my own pleasure. This was the substance of the stuff of my religion. Life, death, beauty, expansive awe, wonder, love for sure, but also brokenness and estrangement, all of this woven into daily life on the prairie, long before any formal training in church. Here was the substrate of the mysteries and the quests that last a lifetime. But there was also the church. Norwegian Lutheran, Our Savior Lutheran Church, in a prairie Gothic building with a limestone exterior drawn from Protestant architecture of the post-war 1950s. You can see that architecture in small towns all across the Midwest. You can see that architecture here in this building when you step outside and you see that large, empty loft and atrium. Uninspiring except for its attempt at loft, but ending up more like an empty granary or a barn lacking a proper hay mow. But that was the architecture of Protestants. You don't want to be too decorative. You know? You don't want to look Catholic. You don't want to appear as if there might be incense coming out of the side vaults of the building or statuary of the saints or anything like that. Rather, just empty space so you don't get distracted from the real point of worship, which was the sermon, after all. But there was also a moment in that church I have never forgotten. I was a little boy, and I was in the church alone in the dark. It was late in the fall, I know. It was cold outside. It had snowed, and I had been there for a class, and my mother was characteristically late. That's where I get it from, so to pick me up. And I was alone in the dark of this church, and I remember walking toward the altar in the dark. The only light in that space was the flame from a candle held in a blood-red sconce, hanging from some lovely gold chains above the altar. And I had learned by that time that the altar is like the Holy of Holies, and that if you walk beyond the kneeling stand, that you might, in fact, die. It's like seeing the face of God or something like that. And to step into the space of the priest or the minister was to potentially desecrate that space, and so I went. And as I approached the altar and looked up at this red glow and the cast of light upon the objects of the altar, a feeling or a sense came over me of mystery that also draws one toward the flame. The red flame glowing from the blood-red sconce. It's what Rudolf Otto much earlier described the idea of the holy, the moment of holy experience of the sacred. You've heard me, many of you, say this over and over, but the mysterium tremendum et fascinans, the great mystery that makes one tremble and yet draws one in. There are many experiences like that of trembling awe and fascination all wound up together. But there were other epiphanies as well in my childhood experience of religion that would come to shape my experience through the years ahead. For lack of time, I'll just tell you one or two real quickly. One was, as a middle school youth, I was on a trip to a Billy Graham evangelical rally. And some of you know what that was all about. And this youth group from this Lutheran church went to a town nearby where there was a film. And the film portrayed a rather dramatic conversion from a life of youthful debauchery into a life of glory and discovery of Jesus. It's the usual ploy of conversion religion. And after the film, typical of Billy Graham events, there was an altar call where young people were invited to come forward and give their lives to Jesus. And there was a considerable amount of peer pressure because everyone was getting up and going forward to the altar, and the minister was saying, "Come, come, come to the table." And they were piping in recorded music of "Just As I Am" without one plea. And I didn't move. And I was overwhelmed with this sense of pressured conformity to an experience that was not genuine but engineered. And I vowed not to give in to that kind of sensibility or religion of compulsion, even when it comes in secretive and underhanded forms. A few years later, I was still involved in the church, and as a teen, there was a high school Sunday school, and the question of evolution came, and was told that you cannot have faith and believe in evolution, and that was the last day I ever went to Sunday school. And in fact led to a fairly long period of time in my life where I considered myself agnostic. So I entered college youthfully convicted as an agnostic, determined to major in political science, ending up with majors in psychology and religious study. just as an aside, agnosticism simply means without gnosis, that is, without a claim to certain knowledge. So I still consider myself something of an agnostic, truthfully. You can call me an agnostic mystic, perhaps. Early Christianity, by the way, was agnostic. Not in the same sense that we use the word, but it shaped itself against Gnostic knowledge. So that's another story. But I remember also the sense of discovery in studying in college, the extraordinary freedom that college offers. When, where are my students? You know, this gift of time where you don't have to cook to eat or make your bed or answer to anyone except your professors. And reading things I had never dreamt anyone could have written. Especially for me, the religious existentialists. I remember reading the Jewish mystic Martin Buber. There's Paul Tillich, the Russian writer Berdyaev, as well as the French existentialist Camus, Sartre, Simone de Beauvoir. I had never read or thought of anything like that before in my life. Discovery of classic film, spending time with the films of Fellini in particular, and the kind of rich body material of Fellini's films. All of this seemed to me to make sense in some extraordinary way in trying to understand my own life in the body, in the world. Understanding that the moment of life and experience has all the truths there are to tell, not abstractions like God. But this very life, our goal is not an otherworldly realm of bliss, but this world of mystery, wonder, suffering, and glory. This all is sacred. This is sacred. As Buber noted in his classic work, I and Thou, all real living is meeting. All real living is simply meeting. Meeting self, other, and world. The sacred and the profane are one, not separate. And I cannot overstate the enduring influence of reading and studying and discovery. That also was the period of social justice movements, the civil rights movement, the anti-war movement, the tearing apart of the social fabric of formerly trusted institutions, including state and church. Finally, it was a time for reconsidering Christianity for me and my childhood Lutheranism. Was it possible to reimagine the ancient stories as the literature, fiction, and poetry of love, love lost, redemptive restoration? Is it possible to rescue the power of faith from the coffins of creedal formula, canon law, or the tidy, self-contained, and arid thought of Protestant theologians? Is it possible to overturn the Protestant obsession over blood redemption and violent sacrifice to appease the gods? Is it possible to find alternatives to the endless despair over the doctrine of sin and the corrupted view of human nature? Or the authoritarian oppression of Catholic hierarchies, or the magical and infantile understanding of prayer? Could one recover or reconstruct or rehabilitate the great teachings about forgiveness, the possibility of redemption in the face of estrangement and loss? Is it possible to rearticulate the reality of God as love? These became the project of a life's work and a brief account for why being here now with you this hour. To quote another poet and poem, William Carlos Williams, who famously wrote, "It is difficult to get the news from poems, yet men die miserably every day for lack of what is found there." And I again read that as it is difficult to get the news from the spirit, religious faith, yet we die miserably every day for the lack of what we might find there. I don't want to suggest that this is the rest of my story is simply coda to these formative years, but I'm running out of time, and these were formative for me. These themes endured despite my meandering through different denominations and occupations. The rest of my journey includes so much more, so many things that are important and dear to me, encounter with world religions, a great deal of time spent studying Zen Buddhism, studies in Judaism, my encounters in my years in Berkeley, California with Islam, reading the poetry of Rumi and the mystic Muslim writers of the Sufi tradition, long discussions with poets and writers in the Bay Area. All of these things, of course, have shaped and changed my thinking so very much over the years. Spent a great deal of time trying to teach a thing or two, and many of you know this, that the more you teach, the more it changes you, the more you realize how little you really know. Elaine Pagels recently published a memoir called Why Religion, and she wrote something that resonates with me very much. It says, many of us, of course, have left religious institutions behind and prefer to identify as spiritual, not religious. I've done both. Had faith and lost it. Joined groups, left them. To my own surprise, I then went back, seeking to understand what happened and to explore how the stories, poetry, music, and art that make up religious traditions have grown out of communities and institutions and yet still resonate. What matters to me more than whether we participate in institutions, whether you're a member or not, or leave them, is how we engage the imagination in dreams, art, poetry, music, literature, since what each of us needs and what we can engage obviously differs and changes throughout our lifetime. What fascinates me most are the experiences that shape, shatter, and transform those who initiate or engage them. Experiences that precipitate us into new relationships with each other and with ourselves. For that and for you, she said, I offer this writing. Well, for that and for you, I offer these thoughts. What has changed me most over the years, perhaps, is my time with you, which was accidental. It was Mary Raywald saying, David, we've got a little group that's meeting up in Washburn, and since you are teaching and writing and doing lectures anyway, you can just pull one of those once a month. That was more than 20 years ago. And I quickly learned that that didn't work for me. I had to do something different or new for every one of those occasions. I never once pulled an old lecture out of the hat. But then I don't do that with lectures either. It probably says something. But the final piece of the accidental Unitarian is you. Aristotle thought that we tend to become what we practice. What we do over time shapes who we are. And I have now done this work with you for more than 20 years. So, I've become a Unitarian after all. The seeds that were there all along, though, were kindled and blossomed, grew here. The spirit of unfettered free inquiry and appreciation for the sacred in all things, the desire to connect that which is falsely separate, the deep meaning in the simplest of things, and finally, and especially, the reality of love. The bonds of love that form sometimes quickly, but then come to maturity over time. Love from which all knowledge worth knowing and all meaning finally derives. And so, to you, my community of friends and families, here I am, here I stand. I could have done no other. So, Thank you. That was a long one.